killing the giants.
Aphrodite pursed her lips. She moved to the next rack, which held battered armor and ripped togas, but Aphrodite looked through them as if they were designer outfits.
"You have a strong will," she mused. "I'm never given much credit among the gods. My children are laughed at. They're dismissed as conceited and shallow."
"Some of them are," Aphrodite laughed.
"Granted. Perhaps I'm conceited and shallow too sometimes. A girl has to indulge. Oh, this is nice."
She picked up a burned and stained bronze breastplate and held it up for Piper to see.
"No?"
"No," Piper said.
"Are you going to answer my question?"
"Patience, my sweet," the goddess said. "My point is that love is the most powerful motivator in the world. It spurs mortals to greatness. Their noblest, bravest acts are done for love."
Piper pulled out her dagger and studied its reflective blade.
"Like Helen starting the Trojan War?"
"Ah, Catoptris," Aphrodite smiled. "I'm glad you found it. I get so much flack for that war. But honestly, Paris and Helen were a cute couple. And the heroes of that war are immortal now, at least in the memories of men. Love is powerful, Piper. It can bring even the gods to their knees. I told this to my son, Aeneas, when he escaped from Troy. He thought he had failed. He thought he was a loser. But he traveled to Italy
and became the forebearer of Rome.
Exactly. You see, Piper, my children can be quite powerful. You can be quite powerful, because my lineage is unique. I am closer to the beginning of creation than any other Olympian."
Piper struggled to remember about Aphrodite's birth.
"Didn't you rise from the sea, standing on a seashell?"
The goddess laughed.
"That painter Botticelli had quite an imagination. I never stood on a seashell, thank you very much. But yes, I rose from the sea. The first beings to rise from chaos were the earth and sky, Gaia and Uranos. When their son, the Titan Cronos, killed Uranos
by chopping him to pieces with a scythe," Piper remembered.
Aphrodite wrinkled her nose.
"Yes. The pieces of Uranos fell into the sea. His immortal essence created sea foam, and from that foam..."
"You were born. I remember now. So you're..."
"The last child of Uranos, who was greater than the gods or the Titans. So, in a strange way, I'm the eldest Olympian god. As I said, love is a powerful force, and you, my daughter, are much more than a pretty face. Which is why you already know who is waking the giants, and who has the power to open doors into the deepest parts of the earth."
Aphrodite waited, as if she could sense Piper slowly putting together the pieces of a puzzle, which made a dreadful picture.
"Gaia,"
Piper said.
"The earth itself. That's our enemy."
She hoped Aphrodite would say no, but the goddess kept her eyes on the rack of tattered armor.
"She has slumbered for eons, but she is slowly waking. Even asleep, she is powerful, but once she wakes, we will be doomed. You must defeat the giants before that happens, and lull Gaia back into her slumber. Otherwise, the rebellion has only begun. The dead will continue to rise. Monsters will regenerate with even greater speed.
The giants will lay waste to the birthplace of the gods, and if they do that, all civilization will burn.
But Gia? Mother Earth?
Do not underestimate her, Aphrodite warned. She is a cruel deity. She orchestrated Uranus's death. She gave Cronos the sickle and urged him to kill his own father. While the Titans ruled the world, she slumbered in peace. But when the gods overthrew them, Gia woke again in all her anger and gave birth to a new race, the Giants, to destroy Olympus once and for all.
And it's happening again, Piper said. The rise of the Giants.
Aphrodite nodded. Now you know. What will you do?
Me? Piper clenched her fists. What am I supposed to do? Put on a pretty dress and sweet-talk Gia into going back to sleep?
I wish that would work, Aphrodite said. But no, you will have to find your own strengths and fight for what you love. Like my favored ones, Helen and Paris. Like my son, Aeneas.
Helen and Paris died, Piper said.
And Aeneas became a hero, the goddess countered. The first great hero of Rome. The result will depend on you, Piper, but I will tell you this. The seven greatest demigods must be gathered to defeat the giants, and that effort will not succeed without you. When the two sides meet, you will be the mediator. You will determine whether there is friendship or bloodshed.
What two sides?
Piper's vision began to dim. You must wake soon, my child, said the goddess. I do not always agree with Hera, but she's taken a bold risk, and I agree it must be done. Zeus has kept the two sides apart for too long. Only together will you have the power to save Olympus. Now wake, and I hope you like the clothes I picked out.
What clothes? Piper demanded.
But the dream faded to black.
Chapter 40. Piper. Piper woke at a table at a sidewalk cafe. For a second, she thought she was still dreaming. It was a sunny morning. The air was brisk, but not unpleasant for sitting outside. At the other tables, a mix of bicyclists, business people, and college kids sat chatting and drinking coffee. She could smell eucalyptus trees. Lots of foot traffic passed in front of quaint little shops. The street was lined with bottle brush trees and blooming azaleas, as if winter was a foreign concept. In other words, she was in California. Her friends sat in chairs around her, all of them with their hands calmly folded across their chests, dozing pleasantly. And they all had new clothes on. Piper looked down at her own outfit and gasped, Mother! She yelled louder than she meant. Jason flinched, bumping the table with his knees, and then all of them were awake.
What?
Hedge demanded.
Fight who? Where?
Falling!
Leo grabbed the table.
No. Not falling. Where are we?
Jason blinked, trying to get his bearings. He focused on Piper and made a little choking sound.
What are you wearing?
Piper probably blushed. She was wearing the turquoise dress she'd seen in her dream, with black leggings and black leather boots. She had on her favorite silver charm bracelet, even though she'd left that back home in L.A., and her old snowboarding jacket from her dad, which amazingly went with the outfit pretty well. She pulled out Catoptris, and judging from the reflection in the blade, she'd gotten her hair done, too.
It's nothing, she said. It's my...
She remembered Aphrodite's warning not to mention that they'd talked.
It's nothing.
Leo grinned.
Aphrodite strikes again, huh?
You're gonna be the best-dressed warrior in town, beauty queen.
Hey, Leo, Jason nudged his arm. You look at yourself recently?
What?
Oh.
All of them had been given a makeover. Leo was wearing pinstriped pants, black leather shoes, a white collarless shirt with suspenders, and his tool belt, Ray-Ban sunglasses, and a pork pie hat.
God, Leo,
Piper tried not to laugh. I think my dad wore that to his last premiere, minus the tool belt.
Hey, shut up.
I think he looks good, said Coach Hedge. Of course, I look better.
The satyr was a pastel nightmare. Aphrodite had given him a baggy canary yellow zoot suit with two-tone shoes that fit over his hooves. He had a matching yellow broad-brimmed hat, a rose-colored shirt, a baby blue tie, and a blue carnation in his lapel, which Hedge sniffed and then ate.
Well, Jason said, at least your mom overlooked me.
Piper knew that wasn't exactly true. Looking at him, her heart did a little tap dance. Jason was dressed simply in jeans and a clean purple t-shirt, like he'd worn at the Grand Canyon. He had new track shoes on, and his hair was newly trimmed. His eyes were the same color as the sky. Aphrodite's message was clear. This one needs no improvement. And Piper agreed. Anyway, she said uncomfortably, how did we get here?
Oh, that would be Melly,
Hedge said, chewing happily on his carnation.
Those winds shot us halfway across the country, I guess. We would have been smashed flat on impact, but Melly's last gift, a nice soft breeze, cushioned our fall.
And she got fired for us, Leo said. Man, we suck.
She'll be fine, Hedge said. Besides, she couldn't help herself. I've got that effect on nymphs. I'll send her a message when we're through with this quest and help her figure something out. That is one aura I could settle down with and raise a herd of baby goats.
I'm going to be sick, Piper said. Anyone else want coffee?
Coffee!
Hedge's grin was stained blue from the flower.
I love coffee!
Jason said, but money? Our packs? Piper looked down. Their packs were at their feet, and everything seemed to still be there. She reached into her coat pocket and felt two things she hadn't expected. One was a wad of cash. The other was a glass vial. The amnesia potion. She left the vial in her pocket and brought out the money. Leo whistled.
Allowance? Piper, your mom rocks.
Waitress!
Hedge called.
6 double espressos, and whatever these guys want. Put it on the girls' tab.
It didn't take them long to figure out where they were. The menu said Cafe Verve, Walnut Creek, California. And according to the waitress, it was 9 a.m. on December 21st, the winter solstice, which gave them 3 hours until Enceladus's deadline. They didn't have to wonder where Mount Diablo was either. They could see it on the horizon, right at the end of the street. After the Rockies, Mount Diablo didn't look very large, nor was it covered in snow. It seemed downright peaceful, its golden creases marbled with gray-green trees. But size was deceptive with mountains, Piper knew. It was probably much bigger up close, and appearances were deceptive too. Here they were, back in California, supposedly her home, with sunny skies, mild weather, laid-back people, and a plate of chocolate chip scones with coffee. And only a few miles away, somewhere on that peaceful mountain, a super-powerful, super-evil giant was about to have her father for lunch. Leo pulled something out of his pocket, the old crayon drawing Aeolus had given him. Aphrodite must have thought it was important if she'd magically transferred it to his new outfit.
What is that?
Piper asked. Leo folded it up gingerly again and put it away.
Nothing. You don't want to see my kindergarten artwork.
It's more than that, Jason guessed. Aeolus said it was the key to our success. Leo shook his head.
Not today. He was talking about... later.
How can you be sure? Piper asked.
Trust me, Leo said. Now, what's our game plan?
Coach Hedge belched. He'd already had 3 espressos and a plate of donuts, along with 2 napkins and another flower from the vase on the table. He would have eaten the silverware, except Piper had slapped his hand.
Climb the mountain, Hedge said. Kill everything except Piper's dad. Leave.
Thank you, General Eisenhower, Jason grumbled.
Hey, I'm just saying.
Guys, Piper said, there's more you need to know. It was tricky, because she couldn't mention her mom, but she told them she'd figured some things out in her dreams. She told them about their real enemy, Gia.
Gia? Leo shook his head. Isn't that Mother Nature? She's supposed to have, like, flowers in her hair and birds singing around her and deer and rabbits doing her laundry.
Leo, that's Snow White, Piper said.
Okay, but...
Listen, Cupcake,
Coach Hedge dabbed the espresso out of his goatee.
Piper's telling us some serious stuff here. Gia's no softy. I'm not even sure I could take her.
Leo whistled.
Really?
Hedge nodded.
This Earth lady. She and her old man, the Sky, were nasty customers.
Uranos, Piper said. She couldn't help looking up at the blue sky, wondering if it had eyes.
Right,
Hedge said.
So, Uranos. He's not the best dad. He throws their first kids, the Cyclopes, into Tartarus. That makes Gia mad. But she bides her time. Then they have another set of kids, the 12 Titans, and Gia is afraid they'll get thrown into prison, too. So she goes up to her son, Kronos.
The big bad dude, Leo said. The one they defeated last summer.
Right. And Gia's the one who gives him the scythe and tells him, hey, why don't I call your dad down here? And while he's talking to me, distracted... You can cut him to pieces. Then you can take over the world. Wouldn't that be great?
Nobody said anything. Piper's chocolate chip scone didn't look so appetizing anymore. Even though she'd heard the story before, she still couldn't quite get her mind around it. She tried to imagine a kid so messed up he would kill his own dad just for power. Then she imagined a mom so messed up she would convince her son to do it.
Definitely not Snow White, she decided.
Nah, Kronos was a bad guy, Hedge said. But Gia is literally the mother of all bad guys. She's so old and powerful, so huge, that it's hard for her to be fully conscious. Most of the time she sleeps, and that's the way we like her. Snoring.
But she talked to me, Leo said. How can she be asleep?
Gleason brushed crumbs off his canary-yellow lapel. He was on his 6th espresso now, and his pupils were as big as quarters.
Even in her sleep, part of her consciousness is active. Dreaming, keeping watch, doing little things like causing volcanoes to explode and monsters to rise. Even now she's not fully awake. Believe me, you don't want to see her fully awake.
But she's getting more powerful. Piper said. She's causing the giants to rise, and if their king comes back... This guy Porphyrion?
He'll raise an army to destroy the gods, Jason put in. Starting with Hera. It'll be another war, and Gia will wake up fully. Gleason nodded.
Which is why it's a good idea for us to stay off the ground as much as possible.
Leo looked warily at Mount Diablo.
So, climbing a mountain, that would be bad.
Piper's heart sank. First, she'd been asked to betray her friends. Now they were trying to help her rescue her dad, even though they knew they were walking into a trap. The idea of fighting a giant had been scary enough, but the idea that Gia was behind it, a force more powerful than a god or titan,
"Guys, I can't ask you to do this," Piper said. This is too dangerous.
You kidding?
Gleason belched and showed them his blue carnation smile.
Who's ready to beat stuff up?
Chapter 41. Leo. Leo hoped the taxi could take them all the way to the top. No such luck. The cab made lurching, grinding sounds as it climbed the mountain road, and halfway up they found the ranger station closed, a chain blocking the way.
Far as I can go, the cabbie said. You sure about this? Gonna be a long walk back, and my car's acting funny. I can't wait for you.
We're sure.
Leo was the first one out. He had a bad feeling about what was wrong with the cab, and when he looked down, he saw he was right. The wheels were sinking into the road like it was made of quicksand. Not fast, just enough to make the driver think he had a transmission problem or a bad axle, but Leo knew different. The road was hard-packed dirt. No reason at all it should have been soft, but already Leo's shoes were starting to sink. Gia was messing with them. While his friends got out, Leo paid the cabbie. He was generous. Heck, why not? It was Aphrodite's money. Plus, he had a feeling he might never be coming off this mountain.
Keep the change, he said, and get out of here, quick.
The driver didn't argue. Soon all they could see was his dust trail. The view from the mountain was pretty amazing. The whole inland valley around Mount Diablo was a patchwork of towns, grids of tree-lined streets and nice middle-class suburbs, shops, and schools. All these normal people living normal lives, the kind Leo had never known.
That's Concord, Jason said, pointing to the north.
Walnut Creek below us. To the south, Danville, past those hills. And that way, he pointed west, where a ridge of golden hills held back a layer of fog, like a rim of a bowl.
That's the Berkeley Hills, the East Bay. Past that, San Francisco.
Jason, Piper touched his arm. You remember something. You've been here.
Yes.
No. He gave her an anguished look. It just seems important.
That's Titanland.
Coach Hedge nodded toward the west.
Bad place, Jason. Trust me, this is as close to Frisco as we want to get.
But Jason looked toward the foggy basin with such longing that Leo felt uneasy. Why did Jason seem so connected with that place? A place Hedge said was evil, full of bad magic and old enemies. What if Jason came from here? Everybody kept hinting Jason was an enemy, that his arrival at Camp Half-Blood was a dangerous mistake. No, Leo thought. Ridiculous. Jason was their friend. Leo tried to move his foot, but his heels were now completely embedded in the dirt.
Hey, guys, he said, let's keep moving.
The others noticed the problem.
Gia is stronger here, Hedge grumbled.
He popped his hooves free from his shoes, then handed the shoes to Leo.
Keep those for me, Valdez. They're nice.
Leo snorted.
Yes, sir, Coach. Would you like them polished?
That's varsity thinking, Valdez.
Hedge nodded approvingly.
But first, we'd better hike up this mountain while we still can.
How do we know where the giant is? Piper asked.
Jason pointed toward the peak. Drifting across the summit was a plume of smoke. From a distance, Leo had thought it was a cloud, but it wasn't. Something was burning.
Smoke equals fire, Jason said. We'd better hurry.
The wilderness school had taken Leo on several forced marches. He thought he was in good shape, but climbing a mountain when the earth was trying to swallow his feet was like jogging on a flypaper treadmill. In no time, Leo had rolled up the sleeves on his collarless shirt, even though the wind was cold and sharp. He wished Aphrodite had given him walking shorts and some more comfortable shoes, but he was grateful for the Ray-Bans that kept the sun out of his eyes. He slipped his hands into his tool belt and started summoning supplies. Gears, a tiny wrench, some strips of bronze. As he walked, he built. Not really thinking about it, just fiddling with pieces. By the time they neared the crest of the mountain, Leo was the most fashionably dressed, sweaty, dirty hero ever. His hands were covered in machine grease. The little object he'd made was like a wind-up toy, the kind that rattles and walks across a coffee table. He wasn't sure what it could do, but he slipped it into his tool belt. He missed his army coat with all its pockets. Even more than that, he missed Festus. He could use a fire-breathing bronze dragon right now. But Leo knew Festus would not be coming back. At least not in his old form. He patted the picture in his pocket. The crayon drawing he'd made at the picnic table under the pecan tree when he was 5 years old. He remembered Tia Kaida singing as he worked, and how upset he'd been when the winds had snatched the picture away.
"It isn't time yet, little hero," Tia Kaida had told him. "Someday, yes, you'll have your quest. You will find your destiny, and your hard journey will finally make sense."
Now Aeolus had returned the picture. Leo knew that meant his destiny was getting close, but the journey was as frustrating as this stupid mountain. Every time Leo thought they'd reached the summit, it turned out to be just another ridge with an even higher one behind it. First things first, Leo told himself. Survive today. Figure out crayon drawing of destiny later. Finally, Jason crouched behind a wall of rock. He gestured for the others to do the same. Leo crawled up next to him. Piper had to pull Coach Hedge down.
"I don't want to get my outfit dirty,"
Hedge complained.
"Shh," Piper said.
Reluctantly, the satyr knelt. Just over the ridge where they were hiding, in the shadow of the mountain's final crest, was a forested depression about the size of a football field, where the giant Enceladus had set up camp. Trees had been cut down to make a towering purple bonfire. The outer rim of the clearing was littered with extra logs and construction equipment. An earth mover, a big crane thing with rotating blades at the end like an electric shaver. Must be a tree harvester, Leo thought, and a long metal column with an axe blade, like a sideways guillotine. A hydraulic axe. Why a giant needed construction equipment, Leo wasn't sure. He didn't see how the creature in front of him could even fit in the driver's seat. The giant Enceladus was so large, so horrible, Leo didn't want to look at him. But he forced himself to focus on the monster. To start with, he was 30 feet tall, easily as tall as the treetops. Leo was sure the giant could have seen them behind their ridge, but he seemed intent on the weird purple bonfire, circling it and chanting under his breath. From the waist up, the giant appeared humanoid, his muscular chest clad in bronze armor, decorated with flame designs. His arms were completely ripped. Each of his biceps was bigger than Leo. His skin was bronze, but sooty with ash. His face was crudely shaped, like a half-finished clay figure, but his eyes glowed white, and his hair was matted in shaggy dreadlocks down to his shoulders, braided with bones. From the waist down, he was even more terrifying. His legs were scaly green, with claws instead of feet, like the forelegs of a dragon. In his hand, Enceladus held a spear the size of a flagpole. Every so often, he dipped its tip in the fire, turning the metal molten red.
"Okay," Coach Hedge whispered. "Here's the plan."
Leo elbowed him.
"You're not charging him alone."
"Aw, come on."
Piper choked back a sob.
"Look."
Just visible on the other side of the bonfire was a man tied to a post. His head slumped like he was unconscious, so Leo couldn't make out his face, but Piper didn't seem to have any doubts.
Dad, she said.
Leo swallowed. He wished this were a Tristan McLean movie. Then Piper's dad would be faking unconsciousness. He'd untie his bonds and knock out the giant with some cleverly hidden anti-giant gas. Heroic music would start to play, and Tristan McLean would make his amazing escape, running away in slow motion while the mountainside exploded behind him. But this wasn't a movie. Tristan McLean was half dead and about to be eaten. The only people who could stop it, three fashionably dressed teenage demigods and a megalomaniac goat.
There's four of us, Hedge whispered urgently, and only one of him. Did you miss the fact that he's 30 feet tall? Leo asked.
Okay, Hedge said. So you, me, and Jason distract him. Piper sneaks around and frees her dad.
They all looked at Jason. What? Jason asked. I'm not the leader. Yes, Piper said. You are. They'd never really talked about it, but no one disagreed, not even Hedge. Coming this far had been a team effort, but when it came to a life-and-death decision, Leo knew Jason was the one to ask. Even if he had no memory, Jason had a kind of balance to him. You could just tell he'd been in battles before, and he knew how to keep his cool. Leo wasn't exactly the trusting type, but he trusted Jason with his life. I hate to say it, Jason sighed, but Coach Hedge is right. A distraction is Piper's best chance. Not a good chance, Leo thought. Not even a survivable chance. Just their best chance. They couldn't sit there all day and talk about it, though. It had to be close to noon, the giant's deadline, and the ground was still trying to pull them down. Leo's knees had already sunk 2 inches into the dirt. Leo looked at the construction equipment and got a crazy idea. He brought out the little toy he'd made on the climb, and he realized what it could do. If he was lucky, which he almost never was.
Let's boogie, he said, before I come to my senses.
Chapter 42. Leo. The plan went wrong almost immediately. Piper scrambled along the ridge, trying to keep her head down, while Leo, Jason, and Coach Hedge walked straight into the clearing. Jason summoned his golden lance. He brandished it over his head and yelled, "Giant!" Which sounded pretty good, and a lot more confident than Leo could have managed. He was thinking more along the lines of, "We are pathetic ants. Don't kill us." Enceladus stopped chanting at the flames. He turned toward them and grinned, revealing fangs like a saber-toothed tiger's.
"Well," the giant rumbled, "what a nice surprise."
Leo didn't like the sound of that. His hand closed on his wind-up gadget. He stepped sideways, edging his way toward the bulldozer. Coach Hedge shouted,
"Let the movie star go, you big ugly cupcake, or I'm gonna plant my hoof right up your..."
"Coach," Jason said. "Shut up." Enceladus roared with laughter.
"I've forgotten how funny seers are. When we rule the world, I think I'll keep your kind around. You can entertain me while I eat all the other mortals."
"Is that a compliment?"
Hedge frowned at Leo.
"I don't think that was a compliment."
Enceladus opened his mouth wide, and his teeth began to glow.
"Scatter!"
Leo yelled. Jason and Hedge dove to the left as the giant blew fire, a furnace blast so hot even Festus would have been jealous. Leo dodged behind the bulldozer, wound up his homemade device, and dropped it into the driver's seat. Then he ran to the right, heading for the tree harvester. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Jason rise and charge the giant. Coach Hedge ripped off his canary yellow jacket, which was now on fire, and bleated angrily,
"I liked that outfit!"
Then he raised his club and charged too. Before they could get very far, Enceladus slammed his spear against the ground. The entire mountain shook. The shockwave sent Leo sprawling. He blinked, momentarily stunned. Through a haze of grass fire and bitter smoke, he saw Jason staggering to his feet on the other side of the clearing. Coach Hedge was knocked out cold. He'd fallen forward and hit his head on a log. His furry hindquarters were sticking straight up with his canary yellow pants around his knees. A view Leo didn't really need. The giant bellowed,
"I see you, Piper McLean."
He turned and blew fire at a line of bushes to Leo's right. Piper ran into the clearing like a flushed quail, the underbrush burning behind her. Enceladus laughed.
"I'm happy you've arrived, and you brought me my prizes."
Leo's gut twisted. This was the moment Piper had warned them about. They'd played right into Enceladus's hands. The giant must have read Leo's expression, because he laughed even louder.
"That's right, son of Hephaestus. I didn't expect you all to stay alive this long, but it doesn't matter. By bringing you here, Piper McLean has sealed the deal. If she betrays you, I'm as good as my word. She can take her father and go. What do I care about a movie star?"
Leo could see Piper's dad more clearly now. He wore a ragged dress shirt and torn slacks. His bare feet were caked with mud. He wasn't completely unconscious, because he lifted his head and groaned. "Yep, Tristan McLean, all right." Leo had seen that face in enough movies. But he had a nasty cut down the side of his face, and he looked thin and sickly. Not heroic at all.
"Dad!"
Piper yelled. Mr. McLean blinked, trying to focus.
"Pipes? Where?"
Piper drew her dagger and faced Enceladus.
"Let him go!"
"Of course, dear,"
the giant rumbled.
"Swear your loyalty to me, and we have no problem. Only these others must die."
Piper looked back and forth between Leo and her dad.
"He'll kill you," Leo warned. "Don't trust him."
"Oh, come now," Enceladus bellowed. "You know I was born to fight Athena herself. Mother Gia made each of us giants with a specific purpose, designed to fight and destroy a particular god. I was Athena's nemesis. The anti-Athena, you might say. Compared to some of my brethren, I am small. But I am clever. And I keep my bargain with you, Piper McLean. It's part of my plan."
Jason was on his feet now, lance ready. But before he could act, Enceladus roared. A call so loud it echoed down the valley and was probably heard all the way to San Francisco. At the edge of the woods, half a dozen ogre-like creatures rose up. Leo realized with nauseating certainty that they hadn't simply been hiding there. They'd risen straight out of the earth. The ogres shuffled forward. They were small compared to Enceladus, about 7 feet tall. Each one of them had 6 arms, one pair in the regular spot, then an extra pair sprouting out the top of their shoulders, and another set shooting from the sides of their rib cages. They wore only ragged leather loincloths, and even across the clearing, Leo could smell them. 6 guys who never bathed with 6 armpits each. Leo decided if he survived this day, he'd have to take a 3-hour shower just to forget the stench. Leo stepped toward Piper.
What are those?
Her blade reflected the purple light of the bonfire.
Gaganis.
In English?
Leo asked.
The Earthborn, she said. 6 armed giants who fought Jason. The first Jason.
Very good, my dear.
Enceladus sounded delighted.
They used to live on a miserable place in Greece called Bear Mountain. Mount Diablo is much nicer. They are lesser children of Mother Earth, but they serve their purpose. They're good with construction equipment.
Vroom, vroom,
one of the Earthborn bellowed, and the others took up the chant, each moving his 6 hands as though driving a car, as if it were some kind of weird religious ritual.
Vroom, vroom.
Yes, thank you, boys, Enceladus said. They also have a score to settle with heroes, especially anyone named Jason.
Jason,
the Earthborn screamed. They all picked up clumps of earth, which solidified in their hands, turning to nasty pointed stones.
Where Jason? Kill Jason!
Enceladus smiled.
You see, Piper, you have a choice. Save your father, or, try to save your friends and face certain death.
Piper stepped forward. Her eyes blazed with such rage, even the Earthborn backed away. She radiated power and beauty, but it had nothing to do with her clothes or her makeup.
You will not take the people I love, she said. None of them.
Her words rippled across the clearing with such force, the Earthborn muttered,
Okay. Okay. Sorry.
And began to retreat.
Stand your ground, fools, Enceladus bellowed.
He snarled at Piper.
This is why we wanted you alive, my dear. You could have been so useful to us. But as you wish. Earthborn! I will show you Jason.
Leo's heart sank. But the giant didn't point to Jason. He pointed to the other side of the bonfire, where Tristan McLean hung helpless and half-conscious.
There is Jason,
Enceladus said with pleasure.
Tear him apart.
Leo's biggest surprise, one look from Jason, and all 3 of them knew the game plan. When had that happened, that they could read each other so well? Jason charged Enceladus, while Piper rushed to her father, and Leo dashed for the tree harvester, which stood between Mr. McLean and the Earthborn. The Earthborn were fast, but Leo ran like a storm spirit. He leaped toward the harvester from 5 feet away and slammed into the driver's seat. His hands flew across the controls, and the machine responded with unnatural speed, coming to life as if it knew how important this was.
Ha!
Leo screamed, and swung the crane arm through the bonfire, toppling burning logs onto the Earthborn and spraying sparks everywhere. 2 giants went down under a fiery avalanche and melted back into the earth, hopefully to stay for a while. The other 4 ogres stumbled across burning logs and hot coals while Leo brought the harvester around. He smashed a button, and on the end of the crane arm, the wicked rotating blades began to whir. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see Piper at the stake, cutting her father free. On the other side of the clearing, Jason fought the giant, somehow managing to dodge his massive spear and blasts of fire breath. Coach Hedge was still heroically passed out, with his goat tail sticking up in the air. The whole side of the mountain would soon be ablaze. The fire wouldn't bother Leo, but if his friends got trapped up here... No, he had to act quickly. One of the Earthborn, apparently not the most intelligent one, charged the tree harvester, and Leo swung the crane arm in his direction. As soon as the blades touched the ogre, he dissolved like wet clay and splattered all over the clearing. Most of him flew into Leo's face. He spit clay out of his mouth and turned the harvester toward the three remaining Earthborn, who backed up quickly.
"Bad vroom vroom,"
one yelled.
"Yeah, that's right," Leo yelled at them. "You want some bad vroom vroom? Come on!"
Unfortunately, they did. Three ogres, with six arms, each throwing large, hard rocks at super speed, and Leo knew it was over. Somehow, he launched himself in a backward somersault off the harvester half a second before a boulder demolished the driver's seat. Rocks slammed into metal. By the time Leo stumbled to his feet, the harvester looked like a crushed soda can sinking in the mud.
"Dozer!" Leo yelled.
The ogres were picking up more clumps of earth, but this time they were glaring in Piper's direction. 30 feet away, the bulldozer roared to life. Leo's makeshift gadget had done its job. Burrowing into the earth mover's controls and giving it a temporary life of its own, it roared toward the enemy. Just as Piper cut her father free and caught him in her arms, the giants launched their second volley of stones. The dozer swiveled in the mud, skidding to intercept, and most of the rocks slammed into its shovel. The force was so great, it pushed the dozer back. Two rocks ricocheted and struck their throwers. Two more Earthborn melted into clay. Unfortunately, one rock hit the dozer's engine, sending up a cloud of oily smoke, and the dozer groaned to a stop. Another great toy broken. Piper dragged her father below the ridge. The last Earthborn charged after her. Leo was out of tricks, but he couldn't let that monster get to Piper. He ran forward, straight through the flames, and grabbed something, anything, from his tool belt.
"Hey, stupid!" he yelled,
and threw a screwdriver at the Earthborn. It didn't kill the ogre, but it sure got his attention. The screwdriver sank hilt deep into the Earthborn's forehead like he was made of Play-Doh. The Earthborn yelped in pain and skittered to a halt. He pulled out the screwdriver, turned and glared at Leo. Sadly, this last ogre looked like the biggest and nastiest of the bunch. Gia had really gone all out creating him, with extra muscle upgrades, deluxe ugly face, the whole package. "Oh, great," Leo thought. "I've made a friend."
"You die,"
the Earthborn roared.
"Friend of Jason dies."
The ogre scooped up handfuls of dirt, which immediately hardened into rock cannonballs. Leo's mind went blank. He reached into his tool belt, but he couldn't think of anything that would help. He was supposed to be clever, but he couldn't craft or build or tinker his way out of this one. "Fine," he thought. "I'll go out blaze of glory style." He burst into flames, yelled,
"Hephaestus!"
and charged at the ogre barehanded. He never got there. A blur of turquoise and black flashed behind the ogre. A gleaming bronze blade sliced up one side of the Earthborn and down the other. Six large arms dropped to the ground, boulders rolling out of their useless hands. The Earthborn looked down, very surprised. He mumbled,
"Arms go bye-bye."
Then he melted into the ground. Piper stood there, breathing hard, her dagger covered with clay. Her dad sat at the ridge, dazed and wounded, but still alive. Piper's expression was ferocious, almost crazy, like a cornered animal. Leo was glad she was on his side.
"Nobody hurts my friends," she said,
and with a sudden warm feeling, Leo realized she was talking about him. Then she yelled, "Come on!" Leo saw that the battle wasn't over. Jason was still fighting the giant Enceladus, and it wasn't going well. Chapter 43. Jason. When Jason's lance broke, he knew he was dead. The battle had started well enough. Jason's instincts kicked in, and his gut told him he'd dueled opponents almost this big before. Size and strength equaled slowness, so Jason just had to be quicker, pace himself, wear out his opponent, and avoid getting smashed or flame-broiled. He rolled away from the giant's first spear thrust and jabbed Enceladus in the ankle. Jason's javelin managed to pierce the thick dragon hide, and golden ichor, the blood of immortals, trickled down the giant's clawed foot. Enceladus bellowed in pain and blasted him with fire. Jason scrambled away, rolling behind the giant, and struck again behind his knee. It went on like that for seconds, minutes. It was hard to judge. Jason heard combat across the clearing, construction equipment grinding, fire roaring, monsters shouting, and rocks smashing into metal. He heard Leo and Piper yelling defiantly, which meant they were still alive. Jason tried not to think about it. He couldn't afford to get distracted. Enceladus's spear missed him by a millimeter. Jason kept dodging, but the ground stuck to his feet. Gia was getting stronger, and the giant was getting faster. Enceladus might be slow, but he wasn't dumb. He began anticipating Jason's moves, and Jason's attacks were only annoying him, making him more enraged.
"I'm not some minor monster," Enceladus bellowed. "I am a giant, born to destroy gods. Your little gold toothpick can't kill me, boy."
Jason didn't waste energy replying. He was already tired. The ground clung to his feet, making him feel like he weighed an extra 100 pounds. The air was full of smoke that burned his lungs. Fires roared around him, stoked by the winds, and the temperature was approaching the heat of an oven. Jason raised his javelin to block the giant's next strike. A big mistake. "Don't fight force with force," a voice chided him. The wolf Lupa, who told him that long ago. He managed to deflect the spear, but it grazed his shoulder, and his arm went numb. He backed up, almost tripping over a burning log. He had to delay, to keep the giant's attention fixed on him, while his friends dealt with the Earthborn and rescued Piper's dad. He couldn't fail. He retreated, trying to lure the giant to the edge of the clearing. Enceladus could sense his weariness. The giant smiled, baring his fangs.
"The mighty Jason Grace," he taunted. "Yes, we know about you, son of Jupiter. The one who led the assault on Mount Othrys. The one who single-handedly slew the titan Kreos and toppled the Black Throne."
Jason's mind reeled. He didn't know these names, yet they made his skin tingle, as if his body remembered the pain his mind didn't. "What are you talking about?" he asked. He realized his mistake when Enceladus breathed fire. Distracted, Jason moved too slowly. The blast missed him, but heat blistered his back. He slammed into the ground, his clothes smoldering. He was blinded from ash and smoke, choking as he tried to breathe. He scrambled back as the giant's spear cleaved the ground between his feet. Jason managed to stand. If he could only summon one good blast of lightning. But he was already drained, and in his condition, the effort might kill him. He didn't even know if electricity would harm the giant.
"Death in battle is honorable," said Lupa's voice.
That's real comforting, Jason thought. One last try. Jason took a deep breath and charged. Enceladus let him approach, grinning with anticipation. At the last second, Jason faked a strike and rolled between the giant's legs. He came up quickly, thrusting with all his might, ready to stab the giant in the small of his back. But Enceladus anticipated the trick. He stepped aside with too much speed and agility for a giant, as if the earth were helping him move. He swept his spear sideways, met Jason's javelin, and with a snap like a shotgun blast, the golden weapon shattered. The explosion was hotter than the giant's breath, blinding Jason with golden light. The force knocked him off his feet and squeezed the breath out of him. When he regained his focus, he was sitting at the rim of a crater. Enceladus stood at the other side, staggering and confused. The javelin's destruction had released so much energy it had blasted a perfect cone-shaped pit 30 feet deep, fusing the dirt and rock into a slick, glassy substance. Jason wasn't sure how he'd survived, but his clothes were steaming. He was out of energy. He had no weapon, and Enceladus was still very much alive. Jason tried to get up, but his legs were like lead. Enceladus blinked at the destruction, then laughed.
"Impressive! Unfortunately, that was your last trick, demigod."
Enceladus leapt the crater in a single bound, planting his feet on either side of Jason. The giant raised his spear, its tip hovering 6 feet over Jason's chest.
"And now," Enceladus said, "my first sacrifice to Gia."
Chapter 44. Jason. Time seemed to slow down, which was really frustrating, since Jason still couldn't move. He felt himself sinking into the earth like the ground was a waterbed, comfortable, urging him to relax and give up. He wondered if the stories of the underworld were true. Would he end up in the fields of punishment or Elysium? If he couldn't remember any of his deeds, would they still count? He wondered if the judges would take that into consideration, or if his dad Zeus would write him a note, "Please excuse Jason from eternal damnation. He has had amnesia." Jason couldn't feel his arms. He could see the tip of the spear coming toward his chest in slow motion. He knew he should move, but he couldn't seem to do it. Funny, he thought, all that effort to stay alive, and then, boom. You just lie there helplessly while a fire-breathing giant impales you. Leo's voice yelled, "Heads up!" A large black metal wedge slammed into Enceladus with a massive thunk. The giant toppled over and slid into the pit. "Jason, get up!" Piper called. Her voice energized him, shook him out of his stupor. He sat up, his head groggy, while Piper grabbed him under his arms and hauled him to his feet. "Don't die on me," she ordered. "You are not dying on me."
"Yes, ma'am."
He felt lightheaded, but she was about the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. Her hair was smoldering, her face was smudged with soot. She had a cut on her arm, her dress was torn, and she was missing a boot. Beautiful. About 100 feet behind her, Leo was standing over a piece of construction equipment, a long cannon-like thing with a single massive piston, the edge broken clean off. Then Jason looked down in the crater and saw where the other end of the hydraulic axe had gone. Enceladus was struggling to rise, an axe blade the size of a washing machine stuck in his breastplate. Amazingly, The giant managed to pull the axe blade free. He yelled in pain, and the mountain trembled. Golden ichor soaked the front of his armor, but Enceladus stood. Shakily, he bent down and returned.